Hello, Mets fans, and welcome to another edition of the Just Mets podcast. My name is Andrew Claudio. That is Rich McLeod, and we are back. Usually, it's to recap a full week of Mets news and notes, and you know what happened because we were live a lot this week. This is the sixth pod we're doing in our last 8 days, if you're including... we didn't do anything last Sunday, so technically it isn't, but we went live on Monday, live on Tuesday, live on Wednesday, and then I did a pod on Thursday. There's a Mets therapy in there somewhere. And then we did a pod on Saturday to react to the blockbuster move of signing Jorge Polanco. But we are back to, move forward, continue with the Mets offseason on our regular Sunday night program. Rich, I will start where I think we always start. How are you? How are you? How's your weekend? How are you surviving the winter wonderland that New York City became this weekend? How are you?
I'm good. Yeah, I did some Christmas stuff with the girlfriend who was in town this week. We did some of the touristy New York things just to check it off the box. And we're in a very holiday themed sweater right now. It's good to be back with you. It's our first non-live show in, I think, 2 weeks. So kind of back to our regularly scheduled programming, at least for now. How are you doing?
I'm good. It's funny how much Jalen Brunson can make a bad Mets week go away. Just man. Shout out to the New York Knicks who are in the NBA Cup final, a thing I totally care about. They will play the San Antonio Spurs on Tuesday, and I got to host the post game on Saturday night for Knicks Film School. And
Done, by the way. I listened when I couldn't fall asleep last night.
Thank you. You're welcome. Glad I could keep you awake or help you go to sleep. I don't know how to process
it. It kept me awake.
That works. It's interesting. And I made this a point on said postgame show. Jalen Brunson's not a homegrown Nick, but I would be devastated so much more than losing Pete Alonso or losing Edwin Diaz if he ever plays for another team. And I think, in parsing through the feelings of the past week and... I'll just say this for Just Mets. We've also had a good week. A lot of people interacting with us, and we appreciate all the support to everybody from the past week. But in seeing the more calculated reactions and the less emotional reactions to what the Mets have done this week, and then some of the more heartfelt emotions in the Mets moving on from Pete Alonso and being forced to move on from Edwin Diaz, I have reached the point of, all right, what do you got? That's where I am with David Stearns. That's where I am with this front office. That's where I am with this offseason. All right, what do you got? You're clearly molding this team in your vision. I remain adamantly against the payroll restrictions that are self-imposed, but I want to see what your plan looks like now that I've had a chance to watch Pete Alonso be introduced as an Oriole and Edwin Diaz be introduced as a Dodger. Where are you in processing the emotions of the last week and the moves that were made, Rich?
Yeah, I mean, I think you put it well. I'll continue to just wait and see what's next. It's the what's next off season. There hasn't been a single move where I'm just okay, I get it now. I can see the clearer picture. If anything, most of the moves or non-moves make me more confused or curious what's happening here. I think emotionally, I wouldn't say I'm over it. Watching the bits of the press conferences on Friday for both Diaz and Alonso, I couldn't really bear to watch the full things, but I did mine through the clips. That was rough, reading the goodbyes and everything, and also just Pete talking about the Orioles like they're the Mets is just, that was pretty tough, being we and us and that kind of stuff. I was just oh man, I'm watching my ex-girlfriend give a press conference about how pumped she is to be dating a new guy. This sucks. But that aside, I'm just curious what is to come. At this point, I'm just ready to look forward instead of backwards. We have no choice anyways. So I hope we get more days like Saturday. Again, that was the Jorge Polanco signing was not this amazing move. We were more in the middle on it, solid back, confusing fit, still kind of trying to figure out how it all comes together in the long run, but would much rather be talking about like things the Mets did and how it's coming together instead of continuing to speculate or mourn the losses of players.
Yeah, the old saying, time heals all wounds. At this point, time and some transactions would heal any wounds that were caused by the winter meetings this year. It appears, as we start to get into the rundown today, it appears there are some transactions being worked on or being discussed, some negotiations being put out there. So The Athletic put this article out over the weekend, and it came up during our Jorge Polanco emergency live stream that, according to Will Salmon and Ken Rosenthal, they put an article, and I should say Dennis Lynn. I'm assuming that's the person that covers the San Diego Padres for The Athletic, but put out a really good article that the New York Mets and the San Diego Padres are engaged in trade negotiations or trade talks, according to people briefed on their conversations. Neither of their rumored superstars, Fernando Tatis Jr. and Francisco Lindor, are part of these conversations. So anybody that thought there might be some Francisco Lindor and the Padres conversations for this summer, which or this winter, I do my best to read the internet to see where rumors come from. I appreciate people that also do that. And like Steve Phillips getting fooled by the internet to think that there actually is conversations out there to the point where credible people have to actually clarify, no, this isn't real, because somebody was basically trying to start a rumor in San Diego that this was happening and it scared a bunch of Mets fans. Whatever. Okay. So Tatis and Lindor are not part of this. I should add, Padres infielder Jake Cronenworth was not a Mets target even before they reached a two-year agreement with Jorge Polanco. A number of Padres players would fit the Mets' needs are under discussion, and a number of Mets youngsters who could help are under discussions. The Padres players that are being discussed are Ramon Laureano, Nick Pivetta, and three bullpen arms that, look, on Adrian Morahone and Jeremiah Estrada, that makes sense. Mason Miller being mentioned in this article, I'll get your take on it in a second, but Mason Miller, for those who don't know, was traded to the Padres at the most recent trade deadline for Leo DeVries. DeVries, I don't know how you say his name, but he was the number three prospect in all of baseball and is supposed to be a superstar when he hits the majors now for the Oakland Athletics. So him being available or mentioned in this is fascinating, because I can't see Preller trading him for anybody but Nolan McLean, and maybe that might not do it. So that was my initial thought. San Diego in turn is asking the Mets about their young major leaguers and all of their top prospects, both pitchers and position players. No deal appears close is the summary of this article. Rich, all of this, the Mets Padres negotiations, any player stand out to you that you particularly want? Any thoughts about the fact that the Mets and Padres are in conversations? What is your reaction to this article?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about the Padres a little bit, where they are clearly a team that needs to start shedding some of the money that is on that roster. They have signed a ton of guys, spent a ton of money in the last few years. They've also traded basically every prospect that wasn't bolted down to the floor in the last couple of summers. They're now like poor, I guess, or not flush with cash with their ownership situation, but they want to hang on to some of their star. You know, they're stuck with Manny Machado, and it seems like they don't want to trade a Fernando Tatis. They're also stuck with Xander Bogaerts. It seems like everybody else is up for discussion potentially. We talked about Mason Miller a little bit the other day. That's clearly the bombshell name of these talks and is the big prize. It makes sense that the Mets are poking around about him after losing Edwin Diaz the way that they did, which was clearly not a part of their plans. Same way that, you know, they brought up Trevor Megill, how deep into talks or interest they were for him with the Brewers, we don't know, but the second like high profile closer that they've been connected to in trade talks in the last week. I'm not giving up a starting pitching prospect that's in the top 50 of the major leagues for a relief pitcher. I don't care how good they are. Those like Jonah Tong is a guy I'll trade for a Scooble and plus a lot more and a high profile starting arm. But as good as Mason Miller is, one, he had a 3.7 ERA when he was in not Oakland last year, Sacramento. So it's, he's very, very good. He had 0.7 ERA with the Padres, but
struck out everybody.
Yeah. He's really good. Would really like him. It's just be trading a starting pitcher when they also have such a desperate need there for a guy who pitches one inning every couple of nights. It's a hard bargain for me. I think I need more than that. And I do think that the, if there's a trade to be happened here, I don't think this would be a one for one. I think there would be multiple players involved in either side. And I'm just not sure where it fits into the Mets' plans. And we'll get to that in a little bit. But if we feel like the Mets are more in this kind of like middle of the road scenario where they don't want to give up a ton of talent for players that aren't going to be here for more than a couple of years, like Mason Miller's under team control for, I believe, four more years. He's under control for a while, but Ramon Laureano is under control for 1 year. Nick Pivetta has an opt out after 2026. Morejon is a free agent after 2026. If you're giving up a lot of guys for Mason Miller and then a bunch of guys on 1 year deals, I don't know if that 100% makes sense. Like, these guys fit the Mets roster. I don't know. I would have to see what that deal actually winds up being, how many players are involved, but yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah. I'll just go on record. I would trade Jonah Tong for Mason Miller, but it wouldn't be a one for one. It would be, like you said, with other things involved. Part of that is I believe in the Mets infrastructure and ability to develop pitching. I would assume in any trade like that, and this is why I keep going, I can't see them trading Miller for anybody but McLean, like with what they gave up for him, which is why I'm sure that came up. That felt like a Danny Ainge type of thing where it's like, I'll put the name out there. Only a Godfather offer is getting Mason Miller after what I gave up for him, which leads me to go to the other players mentioned in the trade. Or in discussions. And this, again, in adjusting expectations about the offseason, reading throughout the entirety of the available players being discussed forced me to see what, like, if Ramon Laureano was a free agent, he falls under the Jorge Polanco category of like, yep, that sounds like the place David Stearns would look for, a control, short-term deal for a guy with a year or two of control that had a decent year, a high OPS last year, could play the outfield. Nick Pivetta, low money. It's $11 million, I believe, for one season. And then he has his opt out. And then you've got two arms in Morejon, who like just didn't allow runs last season. And Jeremiah Estrada, who did allow some runs, but struck out a ton of guys last year. These are all of the, world and of the section of the supermarket that we're now shopping in that seem like they're the David Stearns type of guys. So I would love for, and we can get to, we'll get into this later on in the show. Some other plans to potentially be in place, but as far as my reaction to this article there, I would love Ramon Laureano to be on the Mets next year. It can't be like the next big move that they make. Nick Pivetta was a guy I wanted last off season. And then those other two arms are guys mm-hmm. I would absolutely love in the Mets bullpen. I don't think Mason Miller will be a New York Met, will be the big takeaway I have from this.
Yeah. I think you almost have to separate that stuff, you know, where it's like, I'm not like, again, we differ in opinion on this. That's totally fine. Like,
fine. Yeah.
Trading Noah Tong for Mason Miller plus like one of those 1 year guys, like, I'm not doing that. I'll trade Jonah Tong and more to get like a Mason Miller and like try to get Jackson Merrill, and I'll give them more for that and try to do something like that. Or I would be trying to swing a smaller trade for just maybe Nick Pivetta and Laureano,
right,
and not giving up the big prospects. And I think when you start jumbling it all together, it gets a little bit confusing on how much you would give up. But yeah, I almost see it as like there's separate possible deals within that. And yeah, I'm just curious how aggressive the Mets are going to be there. Cause look, you can trade for Mason Miller. And I think that that falls into multiple categories of the different directions this team could take this offseason because he's under control for so long. But it is very aggressive to do if you're kind of trying to do more of like a soft reboot. So it's another big fat we'll see, I guess.
Yeah.
But I do think AJ Preller is put in a situation where, yeah, he doesn't have to move on from him because he's not making a ton of money. But it's almost like this. It's like when you buy a car, the second you take it off the lot, it's worth $5,000 less. It's like the second they made that trade, they were never getting that much back for him. And it's just how much can you recoup at this point? And because he has so much team control left, is this the height of his value? Or is it worth just like hanging on to him for an extra year? You see, still under control for 2-3 more years and you could deal him then.
Yeah. So this is, I guess, where Jonah Tong should be mentioned as part of the rundown that he was, John Heyman reported or tweeted that Jonah Tong is, quote, highly coveted in trade talks.
Makes sense.
Didn't necessarily say the Mets want to trade him, that the Mets like won't trade him, but the full tweet from John Heyman, as I pull it up on my screen right now, and it takes forever to load. And of course, it's not the first thing that pops up. Jonah Tong is highly coveted in trade talks, and while Mets value him highly, they are listening. Nolan McLean is viewed as off limits and Carson Benz close to that. Mets are stocked with good MLB ready prospects. Puts in parentheses, Jet Williams and Brandon Sproat too. Need proven pitchers plus an outfielder or two. You think, John? Jeff That's McNeil, it? Opening day left fielder. Yeah, I would. Mason Miller being under control for 4 years is more what my mentality is. I was one of the people that was fine with trading Kelenic for Diaz back in the day, though. So that's just how I value like major league ready talent against like years from now. Now, Jonah Tong as early as this year
that's
could be
the
ready
difference.
To play and be ready to pitch. So maybe that's a little different.
Yeah. Kelenic was in Double A at the time.
So that's where I'm. If they don't do it, I'm not going to be like, how could you not do that? I am here to give Jonah Tong the runway to show what he did when Double A and Triple A last year is real, and that he's going to be a major league ready player and be able to put that type of dominance in the major league system. To your point, also, if you want to save your Jonah Tong trade piece for a Tarik Skubal, I absolutely would go that direction
or
too.
Even like another starting pitcher. And you know, I don't want to take away from the rotation, which is already in such desperate need, and then still need to go out and get more pitchers. So I perfect world if we have to trade Jonah Tong, which almost does seem maybe more likely than not at some point. At least yeah. That's just like the buzz of the week. Yeah, I think I would just rather do it for a like at least number two starter.
So let me put a pin in that, Rich, because one name you had mentioned that maybe isn't a number two but closer to a number three is Michael King. And our last item on the rundown this week is that the Mets are apparently just out of the Michael King sweepstakes. Michael King, according to the Boston Globe, as well as Chris Cutillo, a good source of Boston information, the Red Sox, Yankees, and Orioles, not the Mets, are competing for Michael King, and he hopes to make a decision soon. If you were to trade Jonah Tong for a Mason Miller, like in this scenario where it was a Mason Miller for Jonah Tong and they don't get a pitcher back, you could then use your money, allegedly, that the Mets have, to go and add a starting pitcher, whether it's a Michael King or a Zach Gallen. But your thoughts to the fact that it definitely won't be Michael King that is an option, because apparently he's just out of the running, not under one of the three teams mentioned under consideration.
Yeah. I mean, I'd like to see it play out a little bit more before I say definitely not. We haven't had any Mets people say the Mets are out on King, but they haven't been mentioned in these potential finalists from the Boston reporters. If this is the case, I am annoyed because Michael King was a guy that I really like his stuff. I think, I mean, maybe he's going to get a 4 or 5 year deal, and that's, we're at that crossroads again for David Stearns, which I think is becoming, not becoming, I think is a problem that he's so inflexible on what he thinks works for building major league teams. And if Michael King going from a 3 year deal to a 4 year deal, something where it's just automatically is going to take the Mets out, I think it's a problem. And we've seen that. We saw it with Pete. They didn't even bother making him an offer because they're like, we have no desire to give you more than 3 years. The reported Schwarber deal was 3 years, which he was obviously never going to take. Same shit with Diaz. Like, we could go down the list. You go back further. I did the research this afternoon. David Stearns has been basically like the lead decision maker in front offices, either for the Brewers or the Mets, dating back to 2018, when he was became the Brewers GM. He's given out a deal worth more than 3 years just three times, which is Juan Soto, which we all know that that was much more of a Steve Cohen thing, but it technically is on his ledger. Christian Yelich, which was several years ago. He got a 7 year extension when he had 2 years left on his deal. And Lorenzo Cain got a 5 year contract. There was a Freddie Peralta extension in there in 2020, but it mostly just bought out arbitration years anyways, and then had club options tacked on to the end, which takes him up to this last year of 2026. So if you want to give him credit for four, that's not a lot. Only one as a Met so far. So all of this to say is just, again, Michael King is not this like bona fide ace who is going to make the Mets rotation, but I had identified him as an easy guy to just pay money for a few years, have him stick in that middle of the rotation with the high upside to be a number two, and then you acquire somebody else and maybe via a trade, and you're in a pretty good situation. And now it's just like, we can't get him either. And so if you can't get Michael King, and you're obviously not going to go shop in the Dylan Cease aisle, he's already signed, but Framber Valdez, Ranger Suarez, Zach Gallen, you're not going after Michael King. Like, that, the starting pitcher free agent list, I don't know if you've seen it, like, it falls off really fast after that. We barely hear them connected with Imai either. So again, how are you fixing this starting rotation, which is the biggest reason that the team got blown up in the first place? Because if the starting pitching was any decent, they make the playoffs last year, and they probably don't at least eviscerate the roster the way that they had. A lot of names available still, but if you can't even get to be a finalist on Michael King, who are you signing with this like very strict, rigid approach?
It's well said. I'm glad you said the research that you put. I obviously knew I didn't know the Freddie Peralta part of it. I knew the Lorenzo Cain, Yelich, and obviously I've well documented the Soto thing is not a thing I'm willing to give David Stearns credit for. I did want it established. This seems to be the thing. And I did Dexter Henry's pod today straight out of Flushing, and the common phrase that I kept reiterating was self-imposed payroll restrictions. Like, the reason, and I don't want to make this all about the last week, because I'm trying to readjust into what the offseason now looks like, but I used to think that, especially during the 2010s, that there is a certain line the Mets can't go to because of their restrictions payroll-wise that were caused by Bernie Madoff, right? Then Steve Cohen bought the team, and that line didn't exist. On Thursday, it was reestablished for me. Okay, there's a line again. It may end up being a line that's good. It may end up being a line that is necessary for discipline, and David Stearns may get proven right. We also may be sitting here a month from now getting ready for a Kyle Tucker press conference, but I don't think we're ever going to have another conversation about Kyle Tucker or Alex Bregman. I know what Eric Chavez's Instagram story said. I will believe it when I see it. Honestly, I will believe that happens when it happens. And I got to be honest, I think the same thing for Cody Bellinger and the Framer Valdez and any of the other guys that will get more than 3 years on their deals, which is a shame because you look at the free agent market for pitching. It's not great. It does take us to the trade market. And I'm now curious, will you also not be as aggressive in the trade world? You know,
right.
So I don't know if I can count on like the Freddy Peralta or the Tariq Skubal or the Joe Ryan trade to happen because, like you said, rigidity as what he might call discipline. So we'll see what happens. I don't want to spoil the rest of the episode because I know you're about to kind of go through some options that they may pursue. But this is just the new reality that we now exist in as Mets fans. And I'm like you said, it's a what's next offseason, and I'm ready to see what's next. Speaking of what's next, Rich, I believe you have a presentation of sorts to take us through what could be next for the New York Mets. So I will turn the keys over to you, sir.
All right. So one of the things we have been talking about, honestly, since, you know, shit hit the fan with the Diaz stuff early last week. Honestly, if you even go back to the Nimmo stuff, I guess that was the true start of all this. The one thing that we have been talking about and Met fans have been asking is just what is the plan? Because it is unclear to the public, to the fans, and even to the people covering this baseball team. No one knows what they're doing. We've seen reporters say on television and in articles, they don't know what's going on. People behind the scenes that I hear little tidbits from are like, I don't know what's happening anymore. Like this is not how they were supposed to operate. This is not what they told people they were going to be doing this winter. Did they pivot on the fly? Were they always lying? Like we don't know. And with every move and non-move that has happened so far, it has only made the picture more murky. And obviously last week was the biggest doozy that we've had. And Jorge Polanco only made me like slightly more confused as to where they're going with this. So what I wanted to do was to attempt to have a more detailed discussion about it. And what I think I've been able to do is identify the only three potential directions the Mets could be going this offseason. They will vary in the likelihood, of course. I have a feeling where we're going to land on what we think is the direction that they're going. But we distilled it down to these three different directions. Andrew has not seen any of this, by the way. He just knows that I've been putting it together. So we're going to go through it now and kind of talk it through, get his reactions as we go through it. But yeah, these are the three different paths for the Mets this offseason as identified by me. So path number one is what I'm calling the shock and awe pivot. What is this? It is a shakeup of the existing core, which we have seen, but with a full throttle approach toward winning right away in 2026 and beyond. So who are the players that would fall under this category? This is like the we're blowing shit up, but we're still going all in approach. So this is your Kyle Tucker would fall into this category. Your Cody Bellinger, you're going to notice there's some names crossed off on here. Pete Alonso could have fallen under this. Kyle Schwarber would have. Edwin Diaz, obviously those guys that are all off the board. This is your Alex Bregman's. I put Devin Williams here as if he was your setup guy, I think that holds true as your closer. I think that's going to fall into another one of these categories. You'll see some guys are on here in multiple categories. But these are your top tier level free agents. Guys, you're going to have to give more than 3 year deals to pretty much all of them, except for your Diaz and your Williams. And then under your trade categories, this is Tariq Skubal. This is Mason Miller, Byron Buxton, Freddy Peralta, because he's only got 1 year left under team control. Trevor McGill, Sandy Alcantara, Fernando Tatis. These are just some names that could fall under these categories. It's not all inclusive. But I already know your answer, Andrew, but what do you think the odds are that this is the direction the Mets are actually heading in. And under the surface, they're actually planning a huge offer for maybe a Kyle Tucker or Cody Bellinger.
Tucker and Bellinger, the only thing we've heard is that they're monitoring the Kyle Tucker situation and they like Cody Bellinger. Like, not have discussed potentially adding, would love to. They're a part of the suitors, or they have even done anything. Now, part of that could just be how slow the market's been. So I want to give them that benefit of the doubt. But I haven't seen a thing mentioned about Alex Bregman outside of our friend, Mr. Gomez. Framber Valdez has not been mentioned. Haven't seen them, like you said, in on Mai, in on Bichette, in on Suarez, in on King anymore. The Tarik Skubal thing, Heyman put it out there that they're considering whether to go all in or not on Tarik Skubal. I think if he gets traded, he's a Dodger because it's the only team that can justify, it's the only team that could justify, we don't need to extend him. Like, let's go win a third championship in a row. He can go back to a free agent market that may have a salary cap. Like, we're okay going all in for one more season. And then, our dynasty can end because of whatever payroll sanctions then exist after the 2027 CBA is established. So, outside of that, I think my unfortunate reaction to this is not only do I not think that the Mets choose this path, I don't think there's a single player on this roster that has a chance of being on the New York Mets next year.
Oof.
Not a one. Not a single player on this list will be on the New York Mets next year.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, it clearly wouldn't surprise me. This is not one of the ones I was the most confident in. I actually will say not the least confident of the options, and we'll get to that. Tarik Skubal, of all the names on here, is like a pivot point player where if the Mets did trade for him, all of a sudden it's almost like, did they change their mind on what the offseason is going to be again? Or is that just changing our perceptions? And that was the master plan all along. We're just along here for the ride going on the roller coaster. I definitely think pie in the sky. I did give it like a rating system for just, again, my perspective. So out of 4 stars, I give this a 2 out of 4 star chance. There is one on here that is rated lower and we'll see why. But, is there any player on here that you really, really would like to see? If you had to pick one that you would really like to see the Mets make an earnest attempt to get, not a concepts.
Not a Kyle Schwarber offer.
Like a real offer.
Not a concepts of it.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, John Heyman. It's either Tucker or Skubal. Like, it's either the big pitcher or either the big free agent. I would feel so much better, even if they don't get Skubal, I would feel so much better about this lineup if, like, I'm Rich, I'm so tired of seeing projected Mets lineups for 2025 with Mark Semien batting second. If he's hitting second next year, they're going to be so bad. I don't care how many runs he prevents. They're not going to create enough runs with Juan Soto and Francisco Lindor at the top of the lineup. You're just not. He's a 7 hitter at this point in his career. He just is.
Ron Darling had a great quote on MLB Network last week when Pete left, that was like, you paid Juan Soto all this money and right now he's going to walk 150 times in 2026. Yep. 'Cause who the hell would pitch to him with the way that the lineup currently is? Goes without saying, but if you plugged a Tucker into that lineup, it changes a lot really fast. And then you can really get by on adding just a one or two other Polanco type players because you got a couple of stars and then a lengthened lineup, but without a Tucker or even like a Bellinger type in there, it's tough to sell it unless all these homegrown guys are like really awesome.
Which I'll just add, like, there's a world that all three of these 22-year-olds, Carson Benz, Jet Williams, and Ryan Clifford, are all outstanding. There's a chance. It's forced me to dive into the minor league Statcast or version of Baseball Savant. Mm-hmm. Ryan Clifford's numbers pop off the charts as a power hitter. And you read some of his profiles, all of the years that he's been at a minor league level, he's been like there early, you know, like he was in A ball earlier than expected, in Double A earlier than expected, in Triple A, obviously earlier than expected. So he's clearly a fast learner and a fast adjuster and a fast developer. I'm here for it. If that's the plan, okay, you better be right. But as far as this path is concerned, this would be saying to those kids, like, we have other cities for you to go live in eventually. Maybe they do pursue this. I'm here for it, Rich. A month from now, if we're sitting here and Kyle Tucker's a Met or Tariq Skubal's a Met or any of these players are Mets, I'll just, you know what? I was wrong. I misjudged it. I jumped to a conclusion on December 14th.
Yeah.
The evidence I have is that nobody else on this roster, on this list besides Devin Williams, will be a New York Met next season.
This is without a doubt the most fun way forward. And unfortunately, just at this moment, after a week like that, doesn't feel quite likely. But let's move on to the next one, which I think is where we get probably a little bit more realistic, which is path number two, the aggregate retool. What is this? This is acquiring a variety of either stopgap veterans or players who are under team control to hit a soft reset on the roster while making a modest attempt to be competitive. If things go right is the important addition on that. I think you could say 2024 was a bit like this. If you want to look at a version of it that was a little bit more aggressive version of this, I would say this past year with the Yankees was somewhat similar. They didn't blow up the roster, but they did make up Juan Soto in the aggregate. Worked out fantastic for them in the regular season. Did not work out in the postseason when some of those aggregate type players got exposed. Again, short series, but that's the risk that you take. So what does this look like? You'll see a couple familiar names, a couple new ones, and you'll see a couple of players that the Mets actually signed are on here. This is your Jorge Polanco's and Devin Williams, but you also have a Michael King, assuming that that's a 3-year deal or less, which maybe is not going to be the case anymore. That is your Paul Goldschmidt, Pete Fairbanks, Adolis Garcia, Eugenio Suarez on a short-term deal, Ryan O'Hearn, potentially Imai, because again, he's 27 years old, so he does fall into that separate category. And then with your trades, Mason Miller, potentially because he's under control for a long time. Same with Tatis. But you'll go down that list. It's like Joe Ryan, Mackenzie Gore, Jaron Duran. These are all guys who are under control for a while and are a bit younger. Everybody else is guys you can get on the cheap who are under control for a short amount of time. So like Ramon Laureano, you're not going to have to give up much for him. Lars Nootbaar, I had to put him in here. Yandy Diaz, those types of players as well. Does this feel like the energy that we're probably heading towards for you?
Absolutely. That
it's depressing, especially the free agents.
The free agents, I want no part of half of these guys. I wanted no part of one of them as my closer, and he is now my closer.
He is.
I will just say the trade options here are not terrible. The Mackenzie Gores, obviously I'm in on Jaron Duran. Cabrera, Mitch Keller, like change of scenery guys. Like I'm all for it. Even the Luis Robert conversation to go back to. I almost think this is two different paths in one. You know, if you're going free agency and offering these, I'm a bit more skeptical. If you're going the trade market and looking at some of these pieces, because like, Jaron Duran is under contract or under control for two more years, right? It's this year and next season.
I think it's maybe three more, but I would have, yeah.
Even then, like you're getting your center fielder / left fielder to play next to Carson Benge and a top of the order bat. You stick him next to Soto and Lindor. That's a solid top 1-2-3 in your lineup, especially if he regains 2024 form. He was an MVP candidate. Right. Yeah, the trade market here is much more enticing than the free agent market. I would assume that the like Ramon Laureano, Yandy Diaz, Ryan O'Hearn, Pete Fairbanks path is much more likely than the Joe Ryan or the, like, you have Tatis and Mason Miller on here, but like there are tiers within a tier here. And for sure, the Mets are in the second tier for sure because of that line they've self-imposed that they won't cross.
Yeah. And I think looking at this, if this is the one, the path that we feel is the one that they have chosen to go down here, I think what this would tell you is they're not going to sign that many players in free agency, because look at what's available in this bucket. And I would expect a lot of their moves to come, again, if this is the direction they are going, to be in the form of a trade. You know, you might get one or two of these free agents. Like, I could still see the Goldschmidt or the O'Hearn kind of move. Maybe a Harrison Bader. But, you know, what is appealing here? You know, like, I was looking at the free agent pitchers who fall into this category, the starting pitchers, and you'll notice that other than Imai and King, they aren't on here because it's real slim pickings once you get past the top of the market, and that's where the trades come in. And I do think they're going to be heavily active in trades. And for me, at least, and I feel like you agree here, this is my most, I believe this is the likeliest of the three paths that we're talking through to happen. I gave it 3 out of 4 of my star rankings here, just because I'm not going to give anything a 4 out of 4. But yeah, I mean, it, when you start to plot out the actual names of it on a piece of paper like I've done here, it makes me even more concerned about it than I was, where, you know, thinking about it like philosophically, hypothetically, it was like, okay, like, I don't love it, but maybe they can make it up in the aggregate and they wind up on the plus side of the war in the difference of their roster between last year and this new team. And again, like, unless they actually swing a bunch of these trades and it's not for Lars Nootbaar, but it's for more of these more appealing guys, it's like not very exciting. And I don't know how you justify that to the fan base. Again, there's a lot of ifs and buts, and there's names on here that I obviously didn't include, and there's maybe players out there who maybe are available that we don't know about, but it didn't have me particularly excited once I actually I thought I forgot names when I made this, because I was like, it can't be just this in terms of the free agents.
You're going to need a grimace. You're going to need a rally pimp. You're going to need, and that's why
we're going to need a bigger grimace.
Yeah. This is what the 2024 season continues to really represent, that all of these aggregate retool margin moves worked out to the 100th percentile that they could, which is why, if I could give a little grace to David Stearns, I think this was his plan all along, to blow it up completely. And it was going exactly how you thought it would through the first 2 months of the season in 2024. Then they were the best team in baseball for 4 months. Then they went to the NLCS. Then they got Juan Soto and the expectations were through the roof. Then they were the best team in baseball through 2.5 months of the season. And it looked like, okay, maybe we don't need to fully retool. I think what I'm trying to pay attention to here, and I think that goes into my Jonah Tong, Mason Miller calculation, me staring at Joe Ryan on this list, Michael King on this list, Edward Cabrera. Like, the pitching is more where I'm focused on, but I want to see your last path before I go there, because, like, I can't stress this enough. They're pitching, and I know I have a clip going somewhat viral right now on all the different apps right now, but like, the pitching is why the team fell apart last year. I understand, like, if the defense was better, maybe the pitching would have looked a little better. I know what all the numbers are, where they were in FIP, where they were in strikeout rate. They also led the world in walks per 9 innings last year. Like, they just were not a team that threw the ball in the strike zone enough last season. And that was a problem the year before as well. And you telling me that if Pete Alonso wasn't the first baseman and you had Keith Hernandez at first base, Frankie Montas is suddenly a better pitcher? Like, they had some duds in their starting rotation last year, and all of them except for Montas are still here. So I would love to see the upgrades to pitching, even if it's in this aggregate retool section, actually reveal themselves to the roster, which we'll see what the next path. And honestly, we'll see what the next month and a half is for David Stearns.
Yeah. Well, you're not going to like the next path.
Yeah, I know.
Because the third and final path is the total teardown. Say goodbye to everyone you know and love, because the Mets just hit the nuclear button.
So I got to be honest. I figured this is where it was going. And I think you even said something of the when you had the concept of the presentation. I don't even know what this looks like. So I'm very curious what this next slide is going to be.
So this is going to be slightly formatted a little bit differently than the other two. And it's not going to be players that they would bring in. It's going to be more of players they are would be willing to let go, and players that they would now make sure that they're holding on to. So under players who would leave, we've already have three of those, which is, it's actually the most of any of these paths that they've actually already done. And that's Pete Alonso, Brandon Nimmo, and Edwin Diaz. But Francisco Lindor is on here. We haven't gotten any true rumors about this. It seems very, very unlikely they go down this path. But if they're blowing it up, Francisco Lindor and his several years of, you know, $30 million left on his deal would be one of those guys. David Peterson, they would probably look to get, you know, value back. They might do that this offseason regardless. Shamanai has got 2 years and a decent amount of money left. Jeff McNeil, you could add in a few more guys too, but they will have to field a roster. So I wouldn't put everybody on here. But anybody on this team that is making a large amount of money for multiple years is probably going to be on here. Anybody on the north side of 30 years old is likely going to be on this list, aside from guys that they just brought in. And then players who stay, you're not trading for Tarek Skubal or Joe Ryan or Mason Miller. You're keeping Jonah Tong. You're keeping Nolan McClain, Benj, Williams, Sproat, even Christian Scott, Clifford. I think he even let Ronnie Mauricio play every day at that point, because 2026 no longer matters at this point. It's one big trial for 162 games to see what you got. It's, you know, if you're looking back at Mets seasons, it's like 2013. It's like 2 years before you're supposed to be any good, a year before you're supposed to be a year before. Again, I don't think they're going down this path, but it is funny that of all of the paths, they've actually done the most so far in this one. Which is get rid of three of those stalwarts that they've had.
So another thing I said on Dexter's pod that I'll say here, the five words I haven't said much over the past 7 days, to give David Stearns some credit, I don't think the complete total teardown is where he's going. I know that this is the most activity of the three paths for sure. I also would just flatly would not mind if two or three more of these names on the players who leave list end up going. Like, as much as I enjoyed the Shamanai experience year one, if they could find a suitor for him, I'd be okay with it. David Peterson is a free agent at the end of 2026. If they could find a one for one or something of value for a lefty,
but Senga should be on here as well.
Senga, Mark Vientos, like the attachments I had was to the two big free agents the Mets had. And whether I realized it or not, Brandon Nimmo, while being perfectly fine with the trade in a vacuum, like the heart of the Mets fan that is somewhat broken over the past week or in the midst of healing over the past week was because of three of the top four being traded or being let go or letting being allowed to walk out the door. Having said that, I do not think David Stearns, and more specifically, I don't think Steve Cohen will ever field like the Marlins. You know, I don't think this can be a Syracuse plan. I do think the players who stay is a fascinating concept, that you're just looking for young, controllable pieces. You know, we didn't really discuss this when you brought up the Freddie Peralta extension that he gave out, like buying out the arbitration years, but like, say Nolan McClain starts the All-Star game this year and just looks like a stud and has a 1.7 ERA in the middle of July. And the Mets like, you know, let's buy out his arbitration years. He's a rookie. Let's actually do something that the Braves have smartly done over the years and build a young, controllable player on a cheaper deal But it's more what we want rather than let him, you know, be super cheap for now and then let him get to free agency.
Mm-hmm. It'd be nice to see them be proactive in that way.
Yeah.
If you are a fan of the other local sports teams, like this path is the path that the New York Jets are currently on. They traded Sauce Gardner. They traded Quinnen Williams, who apparently got an interception tonight. The Jets still have none, but sidetrack. But they also proactively have given extensions to players who are on their roster who deserved it. They did that with Garrett Wilson last year. They did it with Sauce Gardner before they traded him. They've done it with a couple of other guys. I don't think the Mets are here. I have this as the lowest of the three options in terms of likelihood. I've had this 1 out of 4 stars. I think so many people are going to be really upset if they go down path number 2 here. I don't think they could even survive if they tried to do this for real.
So again, it's the if it's literally everybody but Lindor on the players who leave thing. I genuinely think if I were to poll the fan base, everybody but Lindor and Soto is okay to go. Like, keep the players who stay, keep the young kids, keep Mauricio, keep obviously McLean, Benj, William, Sprout, Scott, Tong, like all of the prospects. Keep all of them. I think a lot of people are out on Vientos. I think a lot of people are obviously out on McNeil. Pick a pitcher. I think a lot of people are out on them. So if that qualifies as a total teardown, fine. I think the roster outside of the core that I've been somewhat defending, I guess, for the past week has needed adjusting. But yeah, that's why I look at this and it's like outside of Lindor, I'm not really attached to anybody on that left column, but I'm intrigued by everybody else on the list, on the young players that still have a lot of years to prove that they can, you know, be productive on this roster.
Yeah, well, I think part of that attachment and or not being attached is that the fact that other than Lindor, the damage has already been done.
They've done
most of the work to blow that up. So what's another couple of guys at that point that you didn't like quite as much as Pete or Nimmo or Edwin Diaz? So,
right.
Yeah. Right. I don't think Lindor is going anywhere, but yeah, it's funny enough. Like, they might be closer to this than they are any of the other paths, even if they don't
today, they are
throttle. Yeah, exactly. So just to summarize, these are our three paths. We had the shock and awe pivot. That's the fun one. The aggregate retool. That's the one we think they're probably going to do. Or the total teardown. Do you feel like there's like a secret like fourth option here that didn't identify?
Yeah, there is. It's an all of the above plan. It's a path of all three. You can tear down the roster, which they, as you just documented, already kind of have. You can tear it down even more. Replace it with some guys that are actually productive everyday players that are more productive than some of the not productive guys that we saw last year. And then shock and awe us with a Kyle Tucker or a big name pitcher that you traded for. You know, if you want to do a little bit of everything, that will at least give me confidence that there isn't a line anymore. That's been my biggest frustration, Rich, outside of the fact that the Pete Alonso jersey will no longer be hanging behind me anymore. I can move on from him if I knew that there are still places that this franchise is willing to go with their resources. If I can consider path one again, I'll start to move on very easily. If I only think that this is now the Moneyball Mets, then I have to readjust my expectations. Those are Oakland A's and those Milwaukee Brewers won a ton of regular season games. Come playoff times when ceilings are established, I think we saw what it's like when you aren't able to spend with the big boys. But yeah, I would love to establish a fourth path where they take a little out of each bucket, and we'll see if. You know, plenty of offseason still. We'll see if they actually potentially do that.
Path for the kitchen sink.
Sign everybody.
Yeah.
Sign and trade for everybody. Who needs a farm system is path four.
Path four, the San Diego Padres.
Yeah, honestly.
Yeah. Oh, well, I thought this was a helpful exercise just to actually put it on paper to see all the ways that they could go with this and see how those could potentially come to life. I hope this was helpful for you. It was helpful for me to make it less of a hypothetical and actually see the kinds of guys that fall under this.
We now have established paths for them to go, which as we do more emergency live streams throughout the off season, we'll see which path they potentially go. Last thing before we get out of here, I didn't put this on any rundown, but it's an impromptu thing.
Okay.
As of today, before any other moves are made, I think we both agree the Mets are going to make more moves.
Mm-hmm.
How many teams do you think are better than the New York Mets in the National League as of today?
In the National League?
Yes.
Well, they finished what, eighth?
They finished seventh
last year.
They finished seventh last year.
Seventh out of 15. They are, I mean, right now, if you just want to start with the division, mm-hmm. they're probably the fourth best team in the division today because their roster is just incomplete. I didn't think that they were better than the Marlins in the second half last year. And the Braves might be slightly better than them right now, too, because the Braves didn't blow up their entire roster and will probably be better this year. So that already knocks them down to like ninth. They're probably 10th, 11th, 12th, that range at the moment. But that is because they literally have like holes on their roster where they have no players at this current point.
So let's just kind of go through it for a second. So we would have... from hearing this, you would have the Phillies, Dodgers, and Brewers all ahead of the Mets, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
We would also have the Cubs ahead of the Mets. Yep. I would have the Padres ahead of the Mets. That's five. So all five of the top five playoff teams. Cincinnati Reds, I would put them ahead of the Mets. I would also put the Marlins ahead of the Mets. So that's down to nine, like you said. Mm-hmm. San Francisco Giants, as is, ahead of the Mets.
Yeah.
Shout out Drew Gilbert. So that's down to 10. Arizona Diamondbacks as of right now ahead of the Mets.
As of today, but that one won't hold up because I don't think Ketel Marte will stay.
And then the Cardinals. I think we could just rule out the Nationals, the Rockies, and the Pirates.
Yeah. They're better than the Cardinals.
So as of right now, they're the 11th best team in their own league. I think they can get up if they just stay in path two and three, like stay away from the shock and awe pivot, right? Mm-hmm. I think they can get up to six or seven. I think maybe the pitching really from the kids in particular shocks and awes us. You know, that's your shock and awe path. The DeGrom, Syndergaard, Harvey showed up again, but in the form of Nolan McLean, Brandon Sproat, and Jonah Tong. My point is, like, as is, they've already kind of took a wrecking ball to a team that missed the playoffs by one game last year. So unless something changes, I think the established floor that I think David Stearns is trying to build here will take some time. And I guess we'll see what happens. As is, I think we are checking out a team that is one of the worst in the National League. And has a chance to maybe get to the middle. I hope they shoot a little bit higher, but we'll see what happens, Rich.
Yeah, and if that is the case, they need to explain themselves because that is not what they have been saying to us publicly and to reporters. Like, they need to come out and say, like, hey, like, we lied, or we changed the plan changed for X, Y, and Z reasons. And we believe that this is better for the long-term future, blah, 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 blah. It'll probably be a lot of lip service, but they have to at least do it because, again, to this point, they really have not said anything of substance. And Steve Cohen says they're still trying to field a playoff team. But, you know, if it's a race to the middle, I don't know that that is true.
Yeah.
But like we keep saying every episode, we'll see.
The we'll see off season.
We'll see.
Between now and the next time, how about this? This is a terrible wrap up. What's the next emergency live stream you think we do? Like, predict.
I'm not going to predict a player, but okay. I think they get a pitcher.
I'm going to predict it's a trade. If we're not going to predict specific players, I will actually predict it'll be a Padres trade.
Okay. I mean, it seems to be the one thing that's got some heat on it. Nothing else with the Mets does, but at that same point, every move the Mets have made has kind of come out of nowhere. So for all we know, the Padres thing is bullshit and they're working on something that we've never even conceived because it hasn't been reported. Who knows?
So Rich and I have discussed scheduling going forward. Right now we're about to go into the holiday season. The Patreon pod will still exist. Check out the Patreon pod every Thursday or Friday-ish, depending on whether emergency live streams mess that up. We might stick with a bit more of an evergreen schedule going forward, so stay tuned. Also, as we displayed on Saturday, should something happen, stay tuned to the Mets, Just Mets YouTube channel. We'll be very ready to go live and react accordingly. Thank you again on Saturday. That was awesome. Just everybody interacting. We're here to react to your chats and your input as well to all of these trades and all these moves that happen. You know what? Can I change my pick?
Okay.
It's going to be a trade. It's going to be a Jeff McNeil trade.
Oh,
that's okay.
Another exit.
That's my pick for the next emergency live. The final piece of this core that gets taken away, that gets sent out, will be Jeff McNeil. That's the next move that the Mets make, and that's the next emergency live stream that we do.
I could see it.
Yeah. There we go. Rich, any final thoughts before we get out of here?
No.
No. Okay. It's been a long week. I've got it all out.
I'm tapped out. This is like the fifth, like you said, fifth or sixth recording we've done since Monday.
Yeah.
I'm exhausted. It's like the week before the holiday break for work too. So I'm like big senioritis going on right now. So I'll react to the moves as they come, but as we sit here at 9:37 p.m. on Sunday night as we're recording it, I got nothing left in the tank.
I feel that wholeheartedly.
Which means they'll sign somebody in like 45 minutes. And we'll
exactly. While we're pivoting to get this episode up, right? Yeah, we will hit publish. And then the Mets have traded for Tarik Skubal. That shit ain't happening.
I'll get the energy back in the tank if they do that.
I repeat, and I feel like, and this is a good place to end. I feel like I'm kind of talking myself through it. I know you've talked yourself through it this week.
Yeah.
I'm trying not to be negative. I want that established, as I just spent a pod probably being more negative than positive. I am trying my hardest. I was talking to Benji Ritholtz and Fred Katz, and like Yankee fans are doing the exact same thing. Nothing's happened yet in the Yankee world except Amed Rosario. But like they haven't lost Cody Bellinger. They haven't like not done something or not done something, if that makes sense. The double negative of like the market's kind of been slow except for the Mets. And it's like and specifically Mets that have been going out. Like it's the Mets got rid of Brandon Nimmo and Pete Alonso and lost Edwin Diaz, and they signed Devin Williams. Everybody else, it's like the Blue Jays added Tyler Rogers and Dylan Cease, and the Diamondbacks brought back Merrill Kelly. And like the market's been somewhat slow.
So yeah, most teams have made 0-1 move so far.
It's why I am trying not to be negative. This week was a readjustment in expectations for me, and a lot of it I don't agree with. So willing to have my mind changed. If path one suddenly shocks and awes me and shows up back in the Mets possibilities, you'll see a different attitude. There's a part of me that is starting, and I think for Rich too, to give this new path that they're going to a chance. Because who knows? Maybe I don't watch Syracuse Mets baseball or Binghamton Mets baseball. Maybe this next crop of Mets everyday players and pitchers is just like the next like future great Mets to help them win a championship and establish a floor of making the playoffs at least. So we'll see what happens on December 14th, though. It is what it is. So Rich,
we'll see.
It's good to see you, as always. It's been fun to see you a lot over the past week and kind of go through all of this together. Before we get out of here, just want to again say thank you to everybody for tuning in all week, all the support that you've given us. We're up to 1700 subs on YouTube, cracked the top 100 on the iTunes chart, the Apple Podcast charts here in the US for baseball. So thank you for that. If you dig the show, please like this video. Remember to subscribe if you are listening, whether on Apple or on Spotify. Leave a 5-star rating and a review. We would greatly appreciate it. Check us out on all socials where we post clips of the show. They vary, so the links are in the description of this episode. And if you want bonus content, first of all, check out the Just Mets newsletter for sure. We're new articles dropping every day over on Substack, link in the description. And every Thursday, our Patreon drops a new bonus episode. A new $5 a month gets you a new episode every week. So check that out there. Until next time, he is Rich. I am Andrew. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. And in the words of the immortal Gary Cohen, we are out of here.